Off the Ball Rugby.
We are such a minor sport here. We are competing against these giants. And the only thing we've got is the Wallabies, because rugby league and AFL, they don't have someone wearing a gold jersey all the time.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster women's rugby. Never stop competing.
Now then, the World Cup gets up and running on Friday at 7:30. Hosts England are up against the United States. It begins for Ireland on Sunday at 12 noon. They're up against Japan at Franklin's Gardens. Delighted to say that Fiona Hayes is with us on the line. Excitement building, Fiona?
Oh yeah, Owen, really looking forward to it. I'm counting down the days. I'm heading over myself and I'm going over socially as well. I'm not working, so I'll have a good time for this first game anyway.
I think optimism levels can often be gauged by what your itinerary looks like. How far beyond the New Zealand game in a few weeks in Brighton are you planning, let's say?
I'd say definitely the quarterfinals. Definitely. After that, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But certainly in chatting to all my group back in Limerick and even the older girls I've played with, I think a lot of people have bought tickets for both quarterfinals because I think they're being held as well in the same area. So a lot of people banking on them getting that first or second spot.
That's the thing. These first two games are so unbelievably important. You don't want to be going up against New Zealand with your place in the competition on the line. So Japan first up, as I've mentioned, and then it's exactly 1 week later when they play Spain. Two very winnable games, you'd think, Fiona. I know it's been a fairly turbulent few months since the end of the Six Nations, but you'd still expect Ireland to have enough against both of these teams.
100%. I wouldn't doubt it either. In chatting to the girls, in looking at their pre-season here, and watching those two games that they played both in Cork and Belfast, Owen, they're building nicely. Japan are a very, very well coached team, and they have been getting better and better. I think Ireland played them recently and had a big win as well. But certainly when it comes to a World Cup, an area Japan would be quite good at is, and I know the coach myself, is that breakdown. She's definitely given them a few tricks to the trade down there, so they'll be looking at trying to slow down this Irish ball. But from what I've seen, and especially against Canada in that second half, once they up the tempo, up the pace and get their clear outs and everything right, and I suppose their scrum has been going well, line out at times has gone well, they're up there with, I suppose, top 5-6 teams in the world at the minute.
What I wanted to do here is actually kind of bring people up to speed on, I guess, how different this squad looks compared to the end of the Six Nations. I'm conscious that maybe people haven't watched full Ireland games since the end of the Six Nations. If we start with the most obvious change between then and, I guess, this weekend, I know maybe she wasn't playing at the end of the Six Nations, but I believe Wafer has been ruled out of Ireland's opening pool game. So this is a knee injury that she has sustained. It required surgery at the start of July. There was obviously concern in July that she was going to miss the World Cup, but there has been a consistent optimism over the past couple of months that, yes, she would maybe miss this first game, maybe the second game, but she'll be there for the New Zealand game. That seems to still be the situation with Eva Wafer.
Yeah, look, and I met her at the Leinster-Munster game on Saturday. She was running water onto the pitch. She was going to the gym after the game. The horrible, doing a little bit of running probably as well. That's the horrible part of it. But look, she didn't go over with the squad. She said, I was chatting to her. She said the recovery is going well. I think if you're coaching and your management now, what you'd be looking at is getting that, the first game, the big win, the second. Obviously, you're targeting New Zealand, but for someone like Aoife Wafer to be ready for that New Zealand game, it would be great if it was just a 20-minute cameo. Yes, they've won the first two games. They're probably guaranteed a quarterfinal spot. Obviously, you always want to finish first in your group, but certainly it would take the pressure off for that New Zealand game if they can get those two wins. And then you'd be looking at going into that quarterfinal, having someone like her either starting or coming from the bench. And look, she's an unbelievable player. If you watch her ability to get over the gain line, I haven't seen it in a very, very long time in an Irish squad. She works hard. I suppose, especially in attack off the back of that scrum. It's where she loves to be. How she goes about her business there is brilliant to watch. But I also feel like the other girls have stood up a little bit in those two games, because in the two warm-up games, because certainly with Erin King, I know you probably might chat about her as well, but the likes of Erin King, Dorothy Wall had done a bit at six as well, and Eva Wafer. You're looking at a lot of experience gone off the back row, and I was a little bit worried going into that first game against Scotland. And what I saw were glimpses of, you know, brilliance from some players. Obviously, they're fresh. They hadn't played played very many games. But to see them be able to rise up another level means that come this World Cup, I think they have the ability as well to push on. But certainly someone like Eva Wafer will be missed. But I'm not as, I suppose, scared. What I'm trying to say is I'm not as cautious around the back row as... having watched the two preseason games, I feel like they have the ability to go out there and with a strong squad there as well.
Yeah, it's a well-stocked position. Mm. Just on what you're saying there with regards to maybe not starting her against New Zealand, I see the point, especially if it's her first time being in the 23. However, the incentive for topping this pool for Ireland compared to finishing second in the pool is genuinely huge, because they will play whoever comes second in Pool D. And France, you'd imagine, are going to top that pool, you'd imagine, over South Africa.
Certainly.
And maybe even, like, would Italy have a chance against South Africa in that pool as well, potentially? But either way, avoiding France from that pool is a big incentive. But then potentially the bigger piece of the incentive is that England are most likely to win their pool. And the winner of Ireland's pool cannot meet England until the final at that point. However, if Ireland were to finish second in their pool, they would be on course to meet England in a semi-final if they were to win their quarter-final. So that could be a real dilemma for the Ireland setup if Wafer is only back in for game three.
Yeah, look, and I think obviously they're constantly reassessing that. I mean, they've the best of S&C, they've the best of player welfare there. You would hope that it's as a coach, from my perspective, as a coach, you'd want her in there. If you have the physio saying she's good to go, she's ready to go. But look, it's a World Cup. You could imagine, having played two games, the level of intensity these Black Ferns are going to be at. I'm sure she'll be able to handle herself if she did get the start, but I just feel like someone on the back of an injury with that team, and if they can compete with them for 50 minutes and you bring her even on for those last 30, imagine what she can add. It's more about that blowout in the lungs and getting a little bit tired around that ruck area when it comes slightly dangerous, I suppose. In the reality, it's not that your injury isn't ready to take it, it's more like the mindset of playing all those minutes and starting. But certainly I know the management will be watching that, looking at her recovery. Yes, she's back in Ireland. I'm not sure when she's flying over, but I'm sure there's constant communication around her. You know, as we saw in the past, we spoke about it before anybody even knew her, the Black Ferns were acknowledging the red cap scrum girl, and they got to know her pretty well in that game the last time. So I'm sure they won't want her coming back in the mix if possible as well.
The John Giles era with Off the Ball has come to an emotional end.
Off the Ball wouldn't exist the way it does without the existence of John Giles.
Helped by a plethora of John's friends and family within and without football, we pay tribute to the great man in front of a selected audience.
So we are here tonight to celebrate not just the impact John has had on Off the Ball over the last 20 years or so, but really the unrivaled impact that he's had on Irish football going back 70 years.
This week in the OTB football feed, look out for the full John Giles tribute night.
If we didn't say John was the best player I've ever played with, he would tell you why he was.
Eddie, I might come to that in a minute. Yeah.
We speak to John himself about his 7 decades in football, former Leeds teammates Eddie Gray and Joe Jordan, plus tributes from Liam Brady, Brian Kerr and many more.
As you say, it's what, 20 odd?
23 years.
20 years. Well, they did well to put up with me for 20.
Released in three parts, we'll drop the first part of the John Giles tribute night on Tuesday morning. And to mark the occasion, it will be available for free for a limited time only. The John Giles tribute, only available in your OTB football feed.
For a number of different reasons, there's been an influx of new faces to the squad over the course of these build-up games and over the course of the training camps during the summer. There's only one uncapped player in the squad in Beth Buttermer, and she would have been an under-20 star recently and impressed at that level. But then you also have early caps as well for the likes of Ivana Kiripati and Nancy McGillivray and Elena Perry. Talk to us about this cohort of players who've been brought into the squad, why they've been brought in and what you expect from them in the short term over this World Cup.
Yeah, look, Beth Buttermer, I've coached her at Bowes a long time. I was coaching her at Munster. She's an unbelievable young player. She offers, she's a hooker. Her throw is really, really good. Scrummage in, she's improved massively in that area as well, but she brings just physicality and aggression. I used to call her what's his name for England? He roared, my Ben Earl, every time there's a penalty, she's well able to get worked up and she gets everyone around her worked up, and that's someone really good to have in that environment. She's a class act in how she deals with that pressure on the pitch as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing her out there. I was a little bit I thought they might have capped her, to be honest with you, in the two warm-up games, because you've two tried and tested hookers ahead of her. They've played a lot of rugby, they're really, really good, but if something happens, and Beth, you know, it's hard to go straight into a World Cup, and she will have to go straight into the squad if there is an injury. It's not like you can reshuffle, there's only three specialised hookers in there, so I thought we might have seen her in one of those games, but certainly she's going to be, I know her, she's going to be sitting itching to get out there, and they would probably get her on, be it in Japan or Spain. I would imagine she'll get a chance to go out there, so I'm excited actually seeing her play. I know what she can bring, and on the world stage I think her personality, I've watched a few of her TikToks, I don't have it myself, but someone showed me, so she's a lot of energy and she'll be ready to roll for this. They're doing wonders over there as well, the girls, in I suppose in promoting the game through social media as well. It's brilliant to watch and get to know these players. I'm really excited as well at the prospect of McGilvery. You know, we saw her in that first, Nancy, in that first game. I wasn't sure, I'd seen her at Chiefs, I'd heard a lot about her. She's not a big hardy 12. We've got Enya Breen. I would consider her somewhere around the same kind of type of player. Obviously she can play 13, I'd imagine, as well, similar to Eve Higgins. That skill set, that footwork, the ability to get around the corner. Stacey Flood, I think, I didn't see it in Scotland, but I would imagine she probably has a bit of a kicking game around her as well. So look, I feel like obviously a lot of this was pushed on through injuries and people not making a squad, but Scott seems to have done it right. I went to the send off for them Wednesday. Melinda Perry was there as well. There's a good bond amongst these players, and sometimes bringing people into an environment can be very, very hard, but especially, I suppose, let's call it a spade, especially if they've played in England, played for England, you're just about to go to a World Cup and you're bringing in a player, but she seems to be a really cool girl. The environment, everybody was sitting around her in the going away, there's a good buzz about her. She's proved herself with Gloucester. I've watched her in those finals with Gloucester as well, an immense scrummager, and that's what he wanted. With injury there in that Kerry injured, you know, you've got to have a really good tight edge. She can move to loose, she can play tight, and to have someone on the bench that he knows really well, that he's coached with England, I think is probably a great call from him, and it just gives that stability in the front row, because as I said, I've seen her scrummage, that if she can get low enough and if she gets involved, there's nobody will move her. Very, very hard to work, and good around the pitch as well.
Right, okay. What can you tell us about Kiripati? She got her first senior cap in the opener of the two World Cup warm-up games. She was born in New Zealand, so she'll have an extra incentive for that final pool game.
Yeah. Look, it's great. Her first cap was down, and I was covering it down in Cork, and her whole family were there, and you could just see the delight on her face. I thought, to be honest with you, she probably didn't start the game. There was a couple of errors early on. There was a couple of handling errors. I'd heard so much about her. I watched her in the warm up. The energy, the footwork, the tackling ability is unbelievable. But what she did in that game then was able to readjust herself. Obviously, get herself back involved in that second half. She had some good carries, really good at clean outs. So she's someone that's young, and I would imagine Scott is earmarked for a while. We spoke about that back row. There's so much competition out there. It's a very, very hard place, but at that 20s level, she done really, really well. And with Connacht, even, you know, I've seen her play, it's that elusive seven, out and out seven. I think she might be able to fit in at eight. That's another added thing. So if you weave a wafer out, being an eight is a very specialised place. If you look at the girls that have played back row, not a lot of them have played eight. Ciara Patti, be it 7-6, she's actually played a bit of rugby at eight as well. So if Brittany is rested for a game, it gives you the ability to have someone who's played that high level of eight as a ball carrier.
Certainly. When it comes to the view of this team and what Scott Beaman is going to be talking about with them going into this tournament, the place of Irish rugby in the history of the Women's Rugby World Cup is fascinating, because they're coming back into the competition for the first time in 8 years. First of all, not qualifying for the last World Cup is a big storyline, and it is the beginning of the arc on this team, the low of that real resurgence over the past 18 months. The last World Cup they did play in was not a great outcome for the Ireland team. There's no getting away from that. So you kind of have to go back to your team in 2014 as to the last time we saw a real level of success from Ireland. And it comes with the mirror image of that Black Ferns game and actually having that unbelievable level of success, that historic moment that you were involved in. It's a strange thing, really, because we're used with the men's team to being involved in this every 4 years, to not really have anything resembling success, even just in terms of one game in so long, is a fascinating psychological approach for them.
Yeah, and I suppose that's probably why people are still listening to me on the radio as well, Owen, because there was no World Cup in between for anyone to chat about. But look, I feel like when they beat the Black Ferns, I know it was WXV, but I think that was a huge defining moment for them as well, because a lot of pressure, I suppose, was put on that group beforehand, the ones that didn't succeed. I remember being in studio, tears everywhere, when they didn't qualify the World Cup. And what people remember in the public, probably because they don't watch a lot of rugby, is what they would have watched is Ireland beat the Black Ferns in the World Cup. And that was a huge moment. It was after that 2013. So that would have been absolutely huge for this team. So there was a lot of pressure on them around that. And I think they put that to bed with WXV, and they go into that Black Ferns game with no fear at all.
Yeah. It would be ridiculous to suggest that they'll see it as anything other than a real opportunity for them. Being realistic, given the players that they've lost and given their best player may not be fully available, does that diminish your overall expectations on this thing? Because we were talking about them 6 months ago as being capable of beating every team in the world, bar maybe England.
Yeah, look, obviously it's a huge loss for them. And if this was 2 years ago, I would have said absolutely. But what I've seen in the program is, you know, since they've started this program, since they started investing in the game, the only thing is they've had such a good cohort that has played the games of all the Six Nations. So they had a good bunch that were there for the last couple of years. That back row in particular, I know Erin King came in, but she was playing sevens and just is absolutely a superb athlete. But the girls that were there were so used to playing with one another, so they always had that. They read each other really well. With the couple of injuries, I was a bit worried. I spoke about that earlier, but what I found with this squad is they're fitter. The girls that are coming through, they're well able. He's got such a big squad together that when there was injuries, you're not quite as nervous as, you know, going and getting someone out of an AIL team or a local team that probably hasn't been training at that high level. But they've had such a big group together that with these injuries, and they've all trained together all summer, the talent was always been there. So yes, we've lost world-class players, but I believe that the girls have the ability to step up, where I will say they have fallen short. And that's probably something psychologically they'll look at in the first two opening games, is how they've started those games. So they have been able to build and build, and absolutely put in huge performances. The bench have come on and made serious impact, but they're starting really slow. So if they can sort that out, I still believe they can cope with any team, and especially that second half against Canada up in Belfast. Canada are going to challenge England for this World Cup, so I firmly believe that Ireland are there, thereabouts. Can they win it? You've got to believe they can win it. Maybe not the players they've lost is a big enough hit for them, maybe, that you're not talking about them in the same bracket, but certainly I would say they will be competing, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to get themselves to the semi-final.
In terms of the competition overall, it looks set to break new ground really when it comes to the sport. So the final is already a sellout. We're going to have 82,000 people at Twickenham for that. It's going to be the most attended women's rugby union match in history. The previous record was 66,000 at the Stade de France, but it goes way broader than this. So there have been 375,000 tickets sold. The price point seems to be a real sweet spot for a lot of people here. They start at £10 for adults, £5 for children, three times the number of tickets that were sold for the 2021 Women's Rugby World Cup in New Zealand. So this is big time. Like, even when we compare it to, say, the Euros in football, the one that was hosted in England and culminated in Wembley was such a massive moment. And it felt, you know, a little bit of a step down when it was hosted in Switzerland this year. To be fair to the English, whenever they host these events, and in terms of women's sport and the competitions over the past couple of years, they have felt massive. And like that's a brilliant thing for a lot of these players, the Irish players and all the rest of the players, to embrace. It's going to feel like the biggest moment in all of their careers for every player of every team.
Yeah, and you're spot on, Owen. I think even those matches, there's the England, the Red Roses in particular, being so good, having won the Six Nations so many times, they're super exciting to watch. They're one of the most enjoyable rugby teams out there to watch, especially when they're attacking, I suppose, inside their own half and they run it. We know their set piece is unbelievable, but they actually play a lot of ball as well, so it's a very exciting brand of rugby. When England play France, they're always brilliant games. I was talking to Fiona Coughlin last week. I mean, the last two World Cup finals, we had one in Belfast and then, or sorry, yes, it was in Ireland, and then the previous one that was over in France. I mean, they were unbelievable to watch. The quality they produced, probably didn't have enough people at those games for the quality that was there. So I feel like England, and there are a few this year, have really blasted, really promoted the game. Those ticket prices are just unbelievable. So even what I think will happen as well closer to the time, Owen, is if you're living in that area, because they're moving it around England as well, so it just gives the fans a chance and local people to experience that. And if you were living in that area and you weren't doing anything on a Saturday, and just say Japan were playing Spain in the local club, and you're paying a fiver to go in and watch it, you might walk past and go in. So there is the ability for that as well, because it's so well priced, and they have, I suppose, marketed really, really well. And yes, even today I was looking at that post about the amount of tickets sold. The final being sold out is unbelievable. Yes, it's the brand of rugby, but you have to take your hats off and how they sold this World Cup to anybody in the country that's watching, and all the travelling fans as well. They've made it very, very accessible.
England are raging hot favourites to win this competition. 5-2 on to win the competition. New Zealand, second favourites, 12-5. They have won 6 out of the last 7 competitions, New Zealand. England have only got 1. Is that enough to dissuade you from England as your tournament prediction?
No, I just feel like, I know there's going to be a lot of pressure on them in this home World Cup. It's absolutely huge. You can only imagine, as the players, especially on the back of that loss over to New Zealand, that was absolutely gutting. But look, I'll be honest with you. I felt that English team that went over, there was players left at home that even, you know, Mo Hunt was one of the best nines in the world. She wasn't selected to even go in the squad. So I think they made some errors around that and how they selected the team and what they concentrated on. They used their sheer power, their sheer brute, and when New Zealand matched that out and over in the final, they had nowhere to go. This England team has a plan A, a plan B and a plan C. I've seen it against France, I've seen it against all other teams. Pressure is huge. I think it might get to them in certain games, and we mightn't see them winning in the huge margins that we're used to, but when it comes to this World Cup, I just feel the talent, even if you look at that first squad they've named against USA today, I'm mean, the bench could start for any other team in the world. They are just absolutely loaded. Even girls who are left at, I suppose, watching from the stands, the 24, 25. I mean, the talent there is something special. So I feel like they're far too strong. I think Canada might give them a crack. New Zealand will have to up their game from what I saw on WXV, which they do in World Cups. But for me, England, I think all the way.
Fiona Hayes, great stuff as always. Enjoy the tournament.
Cheers. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks a million. Quick break.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster women's rugby. Never stop competing.